When did Tiananmen Square protests begin and how long did they last?
April 15th, 1989. The former General Secretary of Communist Party, Hu Yaobang, died, and it was within 48 hours. There are spontaneous demonstrations. As many of you know, there's most of the universities and colleges are in the western part of Beijing. So we start to march from the campuses toward Tiananmen Square. And that marked the beginning of what later on turns out to be possibly the largest nonviolent protest in human history, estimated about over 400 cities throughout China and about 100 to 150 million people directly participated in the street protests throughout China. And it's not just students. It started with university students in Beijing, my university, Beijing University, Beida. But it's quickly spread to almost all campuses throughout China. And then by the time of May, it really started to have large participation and support from pretty much all walks of Chinese society, at least the urban population.
Chen Tong, just for comparison and in relation to the students that we're speaking with, how old were you at the time?
I was actually both a veteran and an older student at the time because I was already finishing my junior year, the third year of college at Beida. And so I was 20 years old.
Charles, on the telephone, I understand that you were curious about some of the demands of the protesters.
Yes. So, my question is, just wondering about, so at that time when the students protest, did they have, specific goals, they want to achieve through the protest?
There were 7 points, but it quickly become fairly focused within a couple of weeks. Pretty much a Chinese constitution, Article number 35, which guarantees freedom of speech and the freedom of press and freedom of assembly. A hunger strike started that occupied the center of Tiananmen Square. So that becomes both the symbolic and physical center of then nationwide movement. So the hunger strikers' demand were quite simple. There was only two, and eventually it boiled down to one, and that is to have open dialogue, to ask the government to have open dialogue with formally designated student body known as the Dialogue Delegation, 对话代表团, the Dialogue Delegation, which I was put to be the co-coordinator, co-chair of the group.
Adriana, I understand that you were a little bit curious about some of the wants that the student leaders had at that time.
Yeah, actually, Mr. Shen, you just mentioned the demands you had, and you were really young at that moment. And Wu Kaixi said the students wanted Nike shoes and taking their girlfriends to bars. So it makes me feel like it was about chasing Western materialism. So did you really know what democracy is, and did you really know what you were doing at that moment?
Maybe not. We were probably clueless. But if we talk about democracy and democratic institutions and other civil society and constitutional democracy processes, but at the same time, China actually stood out as the most brilliant and successful example compared to the early democratization phases in human history. By which I mean, if you look at the early Western industrial democracies, whether you go back to 200 years or 300-400 years in England and then later on in the United States, the China in the spring of 1989 is unique in terms of the movement as a whole, and particularly the Beijing University's students, activists. It's unique in the sense, one, it was by sheer luck or by some kind of shared spirit and consensus. It was determined to have a peaceful, negotiated way of expressing rather moderate political views. And those political demands were very much in spirit and in legal constitution principles. Basically, civil liberties. Again, Article 35, number 35 of the Chinese Constitution, freedom of assembly, press, and freedom of speech.
Mr. Shen, what do you want our generation or younger generation not to forget about this June 4th? And what's your biggest fear for this absence of memories in the younger generation?
Today, commemorating of people who were killed, protesters who were killed in China, is completely impossible. In fact, any efforts will land people in jail, right? But try to commemorate those who the government at the time called heroes, the guards of the Republic, right? You'll be in the same trouble. So you cannot talk about it at all. You can't even whisper about it. This void, as you call it, right? But now I don't worry about it anymore, CC, because one, I finally come to understand such a collective memory cannot be erased at all. No matter how it seems like, if you do a poll right now, all we can say, well, maybe only 60% of people even heard of it, and the people under 30, probably only 15% that knows this or that. But I tell you one thing, I start to watch, and this really gives me confidence, not just a sociological and psychological understanding of major historical events, shared experiences. 5 years ago, before a speech in Washington, D.C., a reporter told me, this is the night of June 3rd in China, the top five Google and Baidu Google searches, at that time Google was still in China, three of them were searches of the Tiananmen 1989 protest and the June 4th massacre. And you guys probably know, when you do that in China, the return results are just the smiley tourists and pictures of the physical space of either the Tiananmen or the Gate of Heaven and Peace or the Tiananmen Square itself, right? But think about it. This is a zero information search. But the top five, the three out of top five searches, including number one, number two, and number five, these are just different spellings in Chinese about the event, right? Were that. And this continued every single anniversary.
Mr. Shen, I think as a student leader, I think your goal or willing before you went to Tiananmen Square was pursuing the true freedom in China. So my question is, what the true freedom in China should be like? And do you have some suggestions for the current Chinese government? Can China achieve that? Thank you.
Well, I think we do not have to follow existing models. Any major historical transformations usually do not follow strictly a previous example. So on that note, the government information machines and apparatus and propaganda have always talked about we don't want Western form of democracy. And on the same token, we probably don't want a Western form of communism, right? And, you know, the 1989 movement, if it shows anything without any dispute, is that all walks of Chinese society, not just university educated, urban elite, not just people sympathized with the Western way of life, all walks of society shared this demands for greater individual freedom and greater liberalization in pretty much all aspects of Chinese life.
Fred on the phone with us, Shen Tong, would like to know what the current president in China might be able to do.
Mr. Shen, how do you think of? I actually have two questions. So my first question is, how do you think of the current Chinese leader, the Xi Jinping?
Yes, Fred, if you could continue your question, please.
Okay, so Mr. Shen, my first question is, how do you think of the Chinese leader Xi Jinping? Do you think Xi Jinping will support the reform on China's current political system towards democracy? So, and what could be the most significant obstacle preventing him from doing so? That's my first question. So,
Thank you, Fred. It appears that Shen Tong's line has gone down. May I ask students that we have with us on the phone and in the studio what your impressions are now that you've had an opportunity to speak with Shen Tong? Have your impressions of the events of 1989 changed at all in the last hour? Do you know more? Do you have further questions about what happened? Lewis?
I think I see a sign of optimism that he provided with us, because usually when people talk about June 4th, it's sad, it's a tragedy, it's a failure. But he said that it's actually a carnival and a party. So I'm kind of intrigued and inspired by the way how he kind of get over with the incident and how he see this from a positive view.
Mm-hmm. Joe, I understand that you learned from your grandfather about the events at Tiananmen. Very few people speak about it, even within the family level, and yet you learned about it through your family. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, true. My grandfather, he told me some major reason that the incident happened was the senior official of PRC government, from PRC government, passed away. He just told me this was the only reason, but I just couldn't believe it, because there must have other major reason, mm-hmm. other major facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that was the flashpoint that kind of ignited all of these other demands or wants for reforms that the students had in their discussions on campus. And that particular moment is what really fueled the whole movement in the streets. And
yes, it is.
Hello, this is Charles.
Yes, Charles.
I think I have a follow-up question, what Mr. Shen Tong was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So he talked about what the freedom or democracy should look like in China in the future. But my question is that with these good wishes, how do this wish is turned to real power? Today we would come here to discuss about this topic, but maybe tomorrow we just go back to work or go back to school. And how do we actually have an influence over the government, how to pressurize it? Because now it is just so powerful, it arrests everyone with different ideas, and it censors every published book or censor internet. So we don't really have any real influence over it. Unless it decides to change, we cannot change it. That's my question.
Mm. And that does bring up a very difficult question. How do you affect change now if you do not agree with what is happening, or if you feel the government should be modified? Shen Tong spoke to me earlier and mentioned that the whole movement was not to overthrow the government, but rather to modify the way that it worked. They wanted more accountability among its leaders. They wanted more transparency to understand more about what was happening in the inner workings of the government, rather than secrecy and just a few people holding power. They weren't looking to overthrow it, he said, but to have more of a say in the process of governing. And it leads to a very good question for everyone of your age, is what do you do to help bring that about, if that is in fact your desire.
Well, actually, I have a comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if any one of you guys have watched a movie from Chile about how they ended the communist dictatorship there and then become a democracy. There's a movie it's an independent film called No. It's the first time that Chile government had the pressure from the international community that they're going to have an election of the former military president and maybe a new group. So it's the first time. And then people in Chile, they were scared because they think if they vote for no, they're going to be prosecuted. There's no hope. They're still going to say yes to the previous president. But then this filmmaker made this film to tell people to say no with a very positive image, that saying no doesn't lead you to fear. Say no. He actually made a campaign video, an ad, which is a video of people dancing and cheering and happy life ever after when you vote for no. And it happened. That's a film. But I think it gives us an interesting idea, maybe, that if we turn the sad tone of June 4th into something cheerful, like we celebrate June 4th as we celebrate June 1st, which is the Children's Day, like we make it a happy holiday that people celebrate. Maybe one day.
Well, there's a good suggestion from Lewis. Go rent the movie No and check it out. We understand Shen Tong is back on the line with us. Thank you. Welcome again. We'd like to turn back to Fred.
I lost the connection, yes. I would like to finish the answer May's question. Actually, May, as any major eye-opening solutions, I would think in history, that the answer is quite simple in terms of what should happen in China. I tell you, the simple answer. What should happen in China today is to have this very discussion in Chinese inside China, and the rest will take care of itself.
How would you achieve that, Shen Tong? How can young people actually begin this discussion?
Well, I should realize that I used to think that way, that now I'm not only over 30, I'm over 40. So I really shouldn't be the one keep yapping away here, you know, because the young people have this innate ability of seeing the future. And I just tuned in the last 30 seconds. I don't know if it was Luis or Joe was talking about the Chilean movie No. And that's it. The little boy in Emperor's New Clothes, I mean, someone innocently raised an objection or a question. It used to be this almost a voodoo and the magic way of thinking, wow, it's just a human spirit and people are so abstract. But now, with last 2 to 3 decades of success of people's power and protest, we know not only it's possible, but it's possibly the most cost-effective and beautiful way of achieving a major change in either political system or national dialogue. And it comes in the form of the night before you think it's impossible, and the morning after it just seems to everyone is inevitable. So this is almost, again, like in physics, you have this co-fusion, like this currency, that's a shared atmosphere, now in a very sad and tragic form of a public huge secret. And then you just so each and every one of you, within reason, within some safe zone, if you just ask the questions, and if you simply say, well, that may not make common sense, no matter how loud the propaganda machines are, and you would be surprised. I could look at what I did in my 18th, 19th, and 20th. When I was high school student, then college student, I didn't think I was politically minded. And in fact, my group wasn't even focusing on political reform. We were busy running around lobbying the National People's Congress and the other legislative body, the consultative body, and with ministries about some regulations and policies to improve basic research, because we were biology and physics students. In Beijing University, we started from something right in front of us, immediately in front of us. We just have a curious mind and we just ask questions, kind of starting from a blank sheet of paper. You see, we can lose 100 times and we'll come back. And they can only lose once. And they know that. It's all or nothing.
Mr. Shen?
Yeah.
This is Charles?
Yes.
So,
hi, Charles.
Yeah, I have a question. So, like, from my experience, like, actually, so, like, my generation, like, young people, my classmates, like, they kind of, like, know about the event, but actually, like, they choose to not think about it because they have, like, something, like, more important for them to think about. Like, you know, many of my class, like, my friends, like, going to university in China, they're thinking about, like making a good income, because, you know, like the housing price is really like high in China, and they have to think about like raising a family or something. So like actually, I think like they know about the event, but they're just like losing interest. Like I think there's a decline of interest. So what's your opinion about that? Do you think it is true, or
Oh yeah, I mean it's true on both accounts. One, people's livelihood is important, no matter how grand my political ideals for the government version or some other ideological ideals. It does not take priority over people's livelihood. At the end of the day, if anyone shares public power, which is entrusted by the people, first and foremost is a livelihood, like the three principles of Sun Yat-sen, right? It's a livelihood, min sheng, is livelihood of the people. Yep. You know, so this is your friend. This is larger. Pretty much everyone in China should think about why the air is so polluted, why food is not safe, why millions of babies are poisoned by poisonous milk powder. You don't have to think about politics. In fact, I personally wouldn't advocate you to think about politics. The little boy in Emperor's New Clothes did not think about this elaborate political attack in a cute way of calling out the emperor has no clothes. It's just a straightforward question. What's going on in China now, especially highlighted since 1989, the usurping of the power and the use of the sheer force, something against human nature. It's against humanity. So a simple question asked will set a chain of reaction. So just look at what in front of you. In fact, you know, it doesn't even have to be a public sphere question. It doesn't even have to be freedom of press and freedom of expression, freedom of assembly. It could be just why there's such a strong tie between major corporations and government policy that carries out the interests of corporations. Why, in a short half generation or one generation, the peasants' revolutionaries become the richest families in the world? Mm-hmm. Now we know as a fact, right? So those questions are pretty obvious.
Shen Tong, we are running a little bit on borrowed time, but we would like Fred to have his opportunity to ask a question. It'll have to be our final question.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And about his thoughts of what the president, the current president, might be able to do.
Hello, I'm Mr. Shen. I have two questions. So my first question is about the current Chinese leader, Xi Jinping. Do you think Xi Jinping will support reform on Chinese current political system towards democracy? So what could be the most significant obstacle preventing him from doing it?
Well, the rhetoric aside, I think we're already seeing very clear evidence. No difference from what I thought even before he took power, that this is more of the same. This is three generations of Chinese leadership basically born out of the suppression of 1989 protests by the design of Deng Xiaoping. I mean, this is Deng's system. It's just a different group of faces and changed two times. So therefore, three political leadership, Jiang Zemin, Li Peng, Hu Wen system, and now Xi Jinping, Li Keqiang, especially Xi Jinping, is really, you know, holding onto all the powers. Others, the Politburo members, may or may not be that important. But it's just more of the same. That's always what I thought. I mean, if our own history of post-1949 China is any guide, that it's rather naive to have another tragedy and then acting surprised. Oh, now we see the true face of Chinese communists in power. No, they always behave that way. You know, but what surprised me, Fred, is that he actually went much further in swinging to the left and using some of the cultural revolution, not just rhetoric, but also real policies, both under the table and publicly, and shifting toward the left wing.
I see. Thank you. My second question is how do you think the Chinese society will be unstable if the Chinese government, they allow its people to discuss and to know the truth of a Tiananmen Square event in public?
Oh, yes. And they know that really well. They not only know that back in 1989, that's why you think about the carrying out of the martial law on the night of June 3rd and morning of June 4th wasn't just removal of occupation and clean up the street and declare a curfew, and then after a few days, then life went back to normal. It was after the departure of the occupation of Tiananmen Square, there are tanks forming line running over students from behind, and there are the systemic and excessive use of violence and jailing and without due process. Right? So they understand that they need to be in control by sheer power, and then in control of the rhetoric and the narratives of what happened. And then, by a moment of genius, Deng Xiaoping realized they cannot even win that. With all of that success, and with all of that cruelty, that they cannot win that. So what he invented is that, let's not even talk about it. The whispering of it is even dangerous. Let's just not talk about it at all. Let's remove the government version and the real historical version and the opposition version. Let's remove it. So they know all too well, as I mentioned a couple minutes earlier, that we, meaning people's spontaneous yearning for a better tomorrow, for a more humane life, for human flourishing in a balanced way, may lose 100 times, and they can only lose once, and then it's all over.
Our students have so many questions, and we could continue for hours and perhaps days on this. And I hope at some point in the future that we can continue this discussion with you, Shen Tong. Thank you so much for joining us.
Feel free to email me using your American first name or not. You know, just feel free to email me.
For all of our guests, Adriana, Cece, Louis, Joe, and by telephone, May, Fred, and Charles, thank you so much for participating. I'm Jim Stevenson, host of VOA's Daybreak Asia and co-host of China Focus. We'd like to thank you for listening to our special discussion of the events of Tiananmen Square 25 years later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.